folks.
Hi, it's April.
Hi, Q. Are you okay now?
Mr. Mieni?
How are you?
I'm good, and you?
I'm fine. That's fine now.
Yeah, we hope so. We also created the new thing, so I'm still checking members that are joining in the meeting.
Okay,
can you hear me, Honorable Jacobs?
I just want to know if my mic is off. Thank you.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Is my camera off?
Sorry?
I just want to find out if my camera is off.
Yes, your camera is off.
Thank you.
I can see you are driving, but your camera is off.
Rafin, can we start?
I'm just trying to... I'm checking if the platform confirmed the, with that all members are in.
I think the principle is that whoever is going to be linked in must put their names on. So it's either members, honorable members, or members from the department. I note there's a number 359061.
Can number 359061 tell us who he or she is? Please. May the person who have joined the platform with number 359061 tell us who he or she.
Dean, if you ask them one more time, you must take them out because it means they are not responding. Maybe it's the same hackers.
Yeah. Can number 3591 identify him or herself? See, it's just gone out.
I've removed him or her, I think.
Okay.
So.
Members, I think we just need to be very vigilant because I saw they tried to hack us earlier. So let only those that are identified, Comrade Nongsa, honorable member, let's try to secure Parliament and the platform.
Noted.
And on even members, if maybe they're changing the gadget, they just have to inform us.
Let's just see how many members are in.
Okay, I'm just confirming that, Chair.
What's happening with you this morning, please?
Come again.
Good morning. What's happening this morning?
I think some hackers tried to invade us.
What PC are you using? What laptop are you using? Using a MacBook or what?
ThinkPad.
Okay. Is your antivirus up to date?
I think so. I don't know.
How does Parliament run the antivirus? It's automatically updated when you connect to the network.
Because I did update it yesterday. Normally it was saying there are things that we cannot be updated yesterday.
Sorry, King. Could you and Elroy probably take a telephone
call? Okay. Yep, Paul.
Hello.
Honorable Lubengo.
Okay, I'm audible. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable members. Apologies for the inconvenience what has just happened. We were about to start our meeting where I indicated that I've got the message that the chairperson will not be present. So according to the rule book, we have to, in the absence,
recording in progress.
All members of the committee has to appoint or elect the acting chairperson for the meeting. So right now I'll open that opportunity. We can start it from where we ended, where Honorable Lubengo has raised a hand and elected Honorable Jacobs. So we went off while we were still looking for a person to second the name that was mentioned by Honorable Lubengo. So can I have a seconder for Honorable Jacob?
King, can I be noted?
Yes, Honorable April.
Honorable April, I would like to second the Honorable Lubengo on the nomination of committee chair.
Honorable members, Honorable April has seconded the name of Honorable April to be our acting, Honorable Jacobs to be our acting chairperson. Is there any name? Is there any person who would like to raise any name?
Good morning. Morning, everybody. Morning, King. Yeah, I think we are seconding the name, but we don't have comrades here. We have honorable members. Thank you.
Apologies.
Thank you, Honorable Mchenjane. I think the name of comrades were being mentioned before we started. So the name of Honorable Jacobs has been initiated and seconded. So I'll hand over to Honorable Jacob to be our acting chairperson. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for the members' confidence for me to stand in as chair for the day. We did get an apology from our chair, Mark, as well as he's not feeling well. I think we've missed a bit of time, so I'm going to try to be as present-like as possible. The meeting is open. You all are welcome. I think the purpose of the meeting is to invite you.
What?
And then from there, it moves to our investment analysts. And these are the people chair who are responsible for the basic assessment of the application. And then once it passes that assessment, it moves to the investment officers, who are responsible for the initiation of the due diligence process. This is now where all the submissions that were tabled by the applicant are tested and verified for on the authenticity and completion of the information. And then on top of the office is the regional manager, who is responsible for the whole value chain of the activities that take place at the regional office level. This is just the process flow, Chair, at the high level, and honorable members. At the pre-investment stage, we have an inquiry where the client will actually get into the system or walk through the office to inquire about the services of SIFA, and that gets recorded. Then from there, they put forward an application. From application, then it moves to the basic assessment as indicated in my previous slide. Then from that stage, now the due diligence process, which is the investment stage, kicks in. Then in the due diligence process, the assessment is conducted, and then it's taken to the committees for approval. Then we have the term sheets and facility letters drafted, followed by the legal agreements. And then we find that there are what we call conditions precedent. Before any disbursement of the funds to the clients, they have to meet all those conditions precedent, because the committees, when they approve these deals, they will put certain conditions that must be met before the disbursement. And then the disbursement happens, and we move then to post-investment monitoring. Well, that is after the client now has been funded and they are actually operating, and our post-investment and deals restructuring unit kicks in to monitor that and ensure that the client is actually complying with all the conditions that were agreed upon. And the first challenge, Chair, that the regional offices face is the quality of applications. We quote here, Chair, the Youth Challenge Fund, where the applicants really presented a very, very difficult challenge for our team. In the main, these applicants were not funding ready. And we actually saw this during the time when we were implementing the COVID-19 SME Relief Fund, which started in April 2020 until the end of July 2020. And we experienced the same problem during the business recovery program in July 2021 during the riots in KZN and some parts of Gauteng. And the nature of the challenges really were, one, incomplete business plans for those applicants who had to complete business plans, no financial statements or management accounts for those that were already operating for us to check if they were really operating at the time during the what we call the era of the violence. There were no cash flow projections for those who needed funding. Those who said they were operating in certain properties owned by different landlords and needed funding to assist them to pay rental, they could not produce lease agreements. And some of them could not produce bank statements either for business or personal account, because the majority of some of these small businesses, they don't separate the bank account from their personal account, because the money comes in through the business and then it gets deposited into the personal account. So we end up having to look at that personal account where the funds of the business flow into. Some needed to procure equipment, but when we said produce quotations to link the funding requirements to the quotations that you would have procured from the suppliers of the equipment that you want to buy, most of them could not produce those quotations. Some could not produce their tax compliance documents or SARS compliance documents, including your tax clearance certificates. For the informal ones in the main, where there's no registration of whatever nature, we requested them to get police affidavit or statement or case number to confirm that, yes, they were trading and they lost some of the goods, but they just flatly refused to go and get a police affidavit. And these numbers, these monies, Chair, and members are audited. We can't just give a person money based on their statement. We need some form of proof that you were actually operating. And we're very flexible when it came to the informal business. It's like, hey, go to the police station, just get an affidavit. And I remember one of them saying, if now you want me to get an affidavit, he's on Bopisa, this thing is going to lead to me being arrested. And the question I asked is, if you are telling the truth, nothing but the truth, why should we be worried about getting arrested? And then we could not find such people. Some could not produce any evidence to prove that they were looted. And with some of the clients, chair and members, we did approve the loan and put some of these outstanding issues as conditions precedent. But after months of waiting for these clients to come back with that evidence, we ended up having to close the programs because the funds were exhausted in any event. And then a person will come now after that and say, no, I've got the evidence, but the program is closed already. So we had that, some of those challenges that we had to face. Challenge number two, chair members, was applications that don't meet or fall outside of CIFA funding criteria. This thinking of somebody must be admitted, it's sitting okay, sitting right on top of my presentation, yes. CIFA, we don't fund applications that do not meet our funding criteria. For example, some could not produce projected cash flows to actually allow us to assess whether the business will be able to repay the money. Some of the owners could not display sufficient entrepreneurial skills or at least experience to be able to manage the business that they want to run. And also some of the requests were above the 15 million rand cap of our direct lending. And also, we, with regards to our license, we can't fund people who are under debt review or unrehabilitated insolvents. And CIFA does not also fund speculative property development. The third challenge here was the application prepared by SIDA and presented for CIFA funding. There is always an expectation by applicants that if a business plan is prepared by SIDA, that means that application will be approved by CIFA. This is a very wrong assumption, Chair, because after the business plan is prepared, the committees and the deal makers will assess the deal to ascertain the viability and this ability to service the loan. The fact that the business plan is prepared does not actually mean it is viable. I can prepare my business plans with all my emotional attachment to my business proposal, but the funder will have to look independently and soberly whether this document that was prepared it will actually fly and pay back the taxpayers' money. And Chair, I must also say to the members, a majority of our applicants, they don't come through SIDA. They come directly to CIFA. It is only those clients who are really unable to package their deals that will go via SIDA. But up to 90%, if not more, of our clients, they come directly and apply through to CIFA. And then we have the ones that are not funding ready, then we refer them to SIDA for assistance, and some will go straight to SIDA to have their deals package that signed. But I want to stress, Chair, that a package document does not mean or guarantee funding. We still have to test the viability of that particular business case following all the what we call the requirements that CIFA has to actually assess for the deal. Then we have got a new practice of applicants now who refuse to accept non-approval. We actually, the committee make the decision of approval based on the viability of the business, the ability to repay the loan, the market viability, the business concept to be viable, and over also if it's not actually investing in over concentrated sectors and also funding that is required, which is outside of the funding criteria of CIFA. The rejection of a funding application tends to lead by some of the applicants to complain that are outside the governance processes of appeals within CIFA, i.e. going to Parliament, going to the Presidency, going to the DG or the Minister or Deputy Minister, and some of late they go to the Public Protector's Office. I mean, this morning I just responded to some advocates from the Public Protector's Office where a person felt because she's got a South African ID, therefore she qualifies. And we indicated to the advocate that your ID alone does not guarantee viability. We are not SASA. Perhaps maybe SASA, you just need to prove that you are South African and then get funding. But here, we're dealing with money that goes out and must come back. And the question of viability then becomes non-negotiable. Otherwise, if we don't enforce that, our impairments are going to keep actually skyrocketing. And as an entity, we cannot have impairments that outstrip our interest income from performing loans. Otherwise, we'll be one of those public entities one day that will not be able to pay even the salaries of its workers. So we need to make sure that these protocols are followed and adhered so that we continue to support SMEs who need funding. Challenge five, number five, Chair, implementation of unplanned emergency loan program. Chair and members will remember that during the COVID-19 era, a lot of programs were introduced by government to try and assist SMEs. For example, the COVID-19 SME relief program and also the business recovery program. These programs were implemented, Chair and members, without any additional capacity for SIFA. And now we had to use the same people who are supposed to process our normal business loans to stop and go and prioritize all these new loans that were needed to address the challenges that the country was facing at the time. But at the same time, Parliament will still want our performance and deliver on the APP. So we needed to find a balance as an entity to deliver on our APP, but also respond to the challenges that the government and the country was facing at the time. But this really stressed the capacity of SIFA, because these mandates were not capacitated by additional human capital. And that has impact on the turnaround times of the loans that people ordinarily will apply under the normal environment. The sixth challenge, Chair, is the general increase in the volume of applications that are processed manually, and also the staff numbers that were not increasing. The value of the value of approvals and disbursements processed by different regional offices has increased several fold, Chair members. And the deal-making staff has remained stagnant over the years, as you will see in the next slide. For example, if you look on top, the number of funding inquiries from regional offices. In 2018, we're looking at about 6,000. 2020, that jumped to 10,000. 2021, 11,000. And 8,007 in 2022. The number of inquiries via the call center, 2018, were around 7,000. 2019, it moved to 8,000. And 2020 jumped to 21,000. 2021, it jumped again by 91% to 41,000, and 2022 to 32,000. The number of jobs that were created over time, in 2018, 1,007, 2019, 3,001, 2020, 3,000, and 2021, 19,007, 2022, 9,378. The value of approvals, shared members, in 2018, were sitting at 196 million. 2019, this jumped by 39% to 273 million. 2020 jumped by 59% to 434 million. 2021, the approvals jumped by 186% to 1.2 billion. 2022, it increased by 90% to 1.4 billion. The same trend, Chair members, was followed with regard to SMEs. 2018, we dispersed about 118 million. 2019, increased by 32% to 156 million. 2020 increased by 46% to 227 million disbursement, and 2021 share it increased by 267% to 832 million, and 2022 increased by 39% to 1.2 billion. Now, with all these massive increases right across the board, Chair members, just look at the staff members in direct lending. 2018 was 76 people. 2019, 81 people. 2020, down to 78. 2021, down to 72. And 2022, through the use of 10s and 6M contracts, we managed to marginally increase by up to 108. This chair shows really the pressure that the team has been facing, because the numbers have doubled and sometimes four times increase, but the staff numbers have remained flat to drive and support the same number of SMEs. And now, if you look also, Chair, at those COVID-19 interventions that we're putting in place, this is what has really actually hampered the ability of the organization to respond timely to some of these things, because the staff numbers are really not increasing, and we've seen people resigning, saying they just can't take the pressure anymore, you know, because we are not increasing the capacity as the demand and the work on the ground is increasing. The solution? We're looking at increased investment and pre-investment application readiness. We're focusing really on collaboration with CEDA on the pre-investment support to ensure greater efficiency on applications and approvals. And then also collaboration with ecosystem partners, more focused collaboration with even the private sector incubators, the LED officers, offices of the municipalities, and also we want to share to focus on more on the customer outreach, establishment of a structured front office with senior fixed-term contracting staff, because share the use of the interns does not help that much, because interns, they come home. They still need to be trained and guided on how to do the work. Therefore, we still need to get the fixed-term contract employees until the major issue is dealt with, to provide guidance and support and training to the interns that we bring on board. We are also looking at hosting. We've been running these webinars to explain to applicants or potential applicants how to complete and package deals so that they meet the stiffer requirements. Also, we want to hire more system contracts to assist with the processing of applications at various stages of these programs. And for the small, what we call value but high volume loans, like your trap and your purchase orders, we want to be using a lot of these system contracts, because the pressure is on check to deliver. We cannot wait for the measure. Therefore, the only choice that we have is to bring in more interns, but support them with the senior people at 6-term contract level. But it's not easy, because people are not actually willing to take these 2-year contracts, because there's nobody in his right mind that would leave a 5-year or a permanent job for a 2-year contract. But we're trying with all those limitations that we face, but it's not easy, I must say. Look at also increasing back office capacity, particularly around due diligence, because we've introduced the loan, what called for the nation system now. But once all the documents have been loaded, the human intervention is still necessary to conduct the due diligence and do side business. And we do need the foot soldiers actually to do that work. And also, I stated that we're increasing automation as we actually move forward to make accessibility and improve the turnaround time. We've done that by the launch in June of the loan origination system, and now we push the majority of our applicants to use the loan origination system. And there were some glitches, some complaining that it's too complicated, particularly those who are applying for smaller loans. But to address that, we are busy now with the team to design a program that is much more simplified to attend to those sub 1 million loans and also your purchase order requests. And we should be able really to finalize the procurement of our system for the smaller loans, but only the purchase order and trap the applications. This chair will assist us really in improving the turnaround time for our applicants and simplify the application process. There was also an issue, Chair, around the performance of the cooperative. This is one area, Chair, so far that we are not happy with the performance of the book. Because out of the 12 cooperatives that were funded to the tune of 5.4 million up to March this year, 100% of those money been paid. They collapsed. Now we've got two more in the pipeline, and the application amount is about 30 million. We've been assessing them,
But we said, Chair and members, it's not going to help us to keep on doing the same thing that has failed, expecting different results. We said, let's come with an intervention. The intervention that we're going to be putting in place in parallel to the processing of those that are viable is the introduction of the aggregator model. The aggregator model really looks at an aggregator or an agronomist in the agri sector who would provide technical support to the co-ops, but at the same time, secure markets for the produce that these co-ops will be producing. Also, we are working closely with the private sector players to secure the off-take agreements, particularly in the retail space. And we want to ensure, Manchester, that these co-ops are sustainable. And we have tested this thing with one of the integrators called Amandelo in the Eastern Cape, which really, they applied for funding of about 30 million. They provide, they on-lend the money to farmers who produce milk in the area. And it is working well, Chair, because these, the people who are at the Amandelo level, like data, are technically strong. And there are, some of them are former farmers, and some of them are former CEOs of some of the lending entities. So there's a lot of business acumen there that makes this thing work in a structured fashion. But now they are hitting some snags because of the drought that the area faced. But the aggregator model is the way that we're going to roll out to improve the performance, the professionalism of how these co-ops are run to ensure their sustainability. The way forward, sir, we're expecting that with the introduction of the loan management system, we will realize better customer service, we will realize improved turnaround times to our customers, and also enhance the brand reputation of SIFA, and also to improve throughput in the entire value chain, and also from rather inquiry to the level of disbursement. But the key issue is going to be the capacity, because you do need food soldiers, number one, to do your due diligence, and also to do post-investment support for the clients that have been funded. Chair, there was additional information that was requested by the committee, which was added to the presentation, which speaks to approvals, the rejections, the reasons for rejection, and we compile this based on the 2Q4 results of the unaudited numbers, but these are numbers that are quite recent, Chair. I'm going to rush through this one, Chair, because it's just too much detail. I hope the members will find time to read in their spare time, and we will unpack it if there are follow-up questions. If you look at blended finance, the applications that we received were about 13, and the applications that were rejected were 12, to the tune of 39 million, because they didn't meet the requirements. The applications that actually were in overflow from the previous quarter were about 8. These ones were previously approved in the previous quarter. And the value of the amount dispersed for those approved loans were about 23 million under the blended finance scheme. Chair, those are the reasons that some of these that were rejected were based on, for example, funded under different products. They could not provide critical information. The client refused to sign legal agreements. Applicant wanted funding for a contract they had not even yet been awarded, and many other reasons. So I will not read all of them because there are many. And if you look at the number that we've rejected to read line by line, I think maybe the whole week. Looking at direct lending, Chair, the applications that we received right across the country were 98, and all those 98 were approved. The value approved was 508 million. And the ones that were finally dispersed were about 68 applicants to the value of 291 million. I must say, Chair, that the disbursement, they follow approvals. So the approvals can happen this month, but the client provides all the relevant information and for the condition precedent in the following month. Then the disbursement and approvals may not happen in the same month. And they may actually happen in the following month, the following quarter. Hence, you will see that sometimes the approvals are higher than disbursements, and sometimes disbursements are higher than approval. That's the nature of the business. That's a long list, Chair, of the reasons why some were rejected. And again, Chair, it's a long list that I will not really bore you to read line by line. The Economic Recovery Program, The applications received were 3,557. We approved 3,435. The value was 920 million. Rejected 122. The value 141 million. Disbursed 1,490. The value of the disbursements was 821 million. The reasons are there, Chair, once again, for those that were rejected, and they vary from one deal to the next. Looking at the EU funding, the application that was received for that one, for that quarter was one, approved that one for 30 million. And then the number that is financed, that was financed over that quarter, which is an overflow, some of them from the previous quarter were 16. To the value of 113 million. The funds, there was no approval for that quarter, but the disbursements that were actually approved the previous quarter were 128, and the value of those disbursements was 184 million. Land reform, three applications received, and they approved two to the value of 55 million, rejected one to the value of 60 million. The number disbursed, 181 of them, to the tune of 71 million. Microfinance, applications received five, approved five, to the value of 151 million, and none was rejected. The number of end users financed as out of the microfinance was 69,325, and the value of amounts dispersed for microfinance were 309 million. RFI, there were 13 that applications that were received, approved 7 to the value of 278 million, rejected 6 to the value of 240 million, the number financed and dispersed were 4 to the value of 10.2 million. The SBIF, there's one application that was received, and that one was rejected because it didn't meet the requirements, and the amount of that application was just 1 million. But the ones that were actually dispersed from
want, they just say they want funding, they want to be assisted to such things. But we always tell them that, you know, sometimes as a business owner, you may not see the business issues yourself. You're thinking everything is going okay. Allow us to come in and do the assessment. So those are the assessments that we then do together with our PAs and our service providers that are accredited in that space. So once we agree with the client then on the assessment and it's done, we then, and the business advisor then develops the business case that this is what you need for your business, and we agree, and then the client agrees, and then we're able then to move on and implement the various interventions that would have identified. But some of the clients come in and say, no, I just want money, I don't want to go through your processes, I need funding. We're able, then we're flexible enough, we don't subject them to the process, flexible enough for them to then apply for funding. And by then we follow up to say, we believe that we need to also assist you with the following things to help you grow your business better and grow your business differently. That is our client journey in terms of how we deal with the businesses in our branches. And obviously the assessments are not a one-day process, so we need our SMEs to be patient while we are assisting them with that, because these helps them to grow and keep their businesses sustainable. I won't go through the trap process in terms of what happens there. This is just for the committee members to read, and it shows how we get to then finish the applications and send them to CIFA. This is just performance comparison in terms of our provinces. Chair, this is just showing how each province fared last year in terms of the targets that we had in the 2021-22 financial year, and what was produced or what was done by each province. And this just shows that the annual target, that the performance per province. So you find here Eastern Cape, 58, and all other provinces being represented, and we have all the data here. Say this is what probably, I'll make an example, this one, so I won't go through all of them. This was the target, for example, for the number of SMEs that we are supposed to reach through entrepreneurship awareness in the Eastern Cape. They were able to reach out to 5,240, this is that target, and that's how then the slide reads and others. You'll find that actually there's a trend, for example, where the organization was not able to meet as large, to meet the targets, and you see that even the provinces are not able to meet those targets. For example, if you look at the number of penalties and mechanics that we had targeted, you see that, for example, in the Eastern Cape, we're supposed to reach 466 SMEs, but we were only able to do 226. Other provinces were able to achieve that, for example, like your first state, but you see Gauteng was not able to, KZN was able, Limpopo fell short, Mpumalanga fell short, and Northern Cape also was not able to reach that target, and so forth. So then that resulted in the organization not meeting that target as we had presented to the portfolio committee in terms of how we have fared as an organization in terms of our target, but we'll deal with this later on. But on most of these targets that we had, you will see that the provinces were able to meet these targets, and these are the number of SMEs that were able to reach out to in the provinces and assist those businesses with various interventions. And this continues on the same trajectory to finish and complete all the targets that we had and broken down per province. Chair, this is the amount spent as an entity that we spent in provinces from our budget. You note that from the budget that we had before we received the surplus, which we received the more than 200 million surplus that we applied for last year, we then had spent out of almost 100 million budget, we had spent 448 million of that on the provinces, which shows that the bigger spending in terms of what we get goes to the provinces for various projects within the provinces. You see that the Eastern Cape got 58 million with Northern Cape and Gauteng coming in low at 34 million and 36 million, lower than all other provinces. So this is because we spend money according to the number of branches that we have, and Gauteng we don't have a lot of branches. I think we've got about three branches or so in Gauteng, so the allocation that goes to Gauteng is smaller than the allocation that goes into other provinces. With the where we are big, like to the Northern Cape, getting the bigger budget, but other provinces coming in, like Mpumalanga Northwest, getting 42 million from the budget allocation before, getting 53 million, Kristen getting 47 million, which is still higher than what we distributed to the Gauteng provinces. And this talks to the number of businesses that we're able to reach to using the budget that we had for those provinces. So instead of awareness, this is what we are able to reach in terms of the provinces and various interventions and shows in women-owned businesses. I would have loved to just go through each and every number, but that would take a lot of time. And I'm using, again, Eastern Cape as an example. You find that they were able to reach out to 2,966 women-owned businesses, 1,905 male-owned, and 1,067 businesses that could reach out to a youth. And the breakdown between the rural, township, and urban, where in the rural areas we've got 2,152 businesses that were able to reach out to, 1,047 in the township, and then urban 1,401, which then shows that in Eastern Cape we were more into the rural areas as compared to the urban areas. And again, that reflects the same picture for Free State, Gauteng, and the rest of the provinces in terms of where we were and how we were able to reach out and the number of jobs then created in the process. These were the sectors from agriculture to mining that we were able to reach out to, and services that we were able to reach out to through all these interventions. So these are the businesses that are represented here are in all these sectors and subsectors of the economy. But I wanted to just make one example and then say that in this, the total then of the entities that we reached out to, and again, women-owned businesses coming out on top, 25,000 for the year from the provinces, and youth-owned businesses at 17,000. Out of all the businesses that we're able to support. Rural businesses, again, at 25,500, and township businesses at 25.9 or at 26,000. So that's a breakdown of how then we reached out to SMEs in the provinces that we support in the country using the branch network that we have. Obviously, we've got that big branch network which assists us with this. On the under the TREP program, there are initiatives that we did in terms of the various business initiatives that we were able to offer to these businesses from a TREP point of view, or the township businesses point of view, township and rural businesses point of view. From a compliance point of view, in terms of pre and post investment, we're able to assist 34,075 businesses with compliance, and we're able to add from a mentorship, 1,203 businesses were assigned mentors from a TREP point of view. General management and business skills, just around 3,400. And then the optional health and safety, 213 businesses were assisted. And there's this rollout of the point of sale gadget, which is mobile devices that we have purchased for the spaza shop to be able to transact. These devices will help us to then be able to monitor the activity that takes place within the spaza shops. Once they start using those devices, then we'll be able to see the sales that they are able to make. We'll get the full report. We'll be able to see the stock that moves quicker within. And that is then going to be linked to unpacking the value chain in terms of how do we then make sure that we bring black-owned warehouses or wholesalers into closer to these partner shops, you know, so that then they're able to purchase their products, especially fast-moving goods, closer and then to travel distances and a better price. But that's a bigger picture that as a department or as a portfolio we are looking at, and how to affect that and opening the value chain and have black-owned wholesalers within the township. So we are hoping that these will help us to put about 5,000 of these devices to start with. So we see and that was matched with what we had approved as a portfolio from a spaza shop point of view. Chair, we will then, I will then move on to some of the TREP challenges that are common across the provinces. Chair, one must say that TREP was introduced as a measure of, or as a response to COVID, the COVID-19 pandemic, and we had all these problems coming through during that time to try and ensure that small businesses and also informal businesses, they do survive in the townships and in the rural areas, and TREP really came up at that time. And our biggest challenge is that we found that the businesses that were there in the townships, they were not really formalized businesses, because for us as a portfolio to issue funding, we need these businesses to be formalized so then they're able to assess the services of the portfolio throughout the department and SIPA. If not, then it becomes difficult, because then if it's not formalized, they're not able to account for the government resources that we are spending on that business. So that was the biggest challenge that we faced. As I'm saying, there was we didn't have that research prior to introducing these programs, and we found that most of the businesses then were not ready. They didn't have the required documents for us to finalize their application for funding, which then meant we had to start from scratch, assisting them with that, and getting them through then the system, which then delayed the system funding. We also realized that most of the businesses didn't even understand the additional burden that comes, or matter that comes with being registered, you know, in terms of you know, your taxes, if you reach the threshold, you know, and compiling financial statements and so forth, which was one of the things that they were not ready to do. But then what we calling for is that we need to also go out more, educate these businesses from a solution point of view, but also we need to, you know, appeal that the CITC process be even much more clarified and be even much more simplified for these businesses to be able to register businesses, and that should be dealt with under the tax reduction project. And there were issues with the cost of compliance, especially that were assisting other shop producers on the ITC paying for those businesses, and which left other businesses like your Shanyamas, your Butcheries, and others which were not getting similar assistance from us from a payment of the ITC or registration in via the ITC point of view. But then we since then changed that since the introduction of this scheme, and now we have changed our processes and we are paying for ITC registration for all our TREP clients, which makes it easy because some of them didn't even have the small money required to register their businesses. Those are the real problems that you find in the township and rural areas, but we've resolved that, that we've opened our system and we're able to pay for those. They don't have to contribute a single cent for that. Also, I think the cost of obtaining permits was a big issue, which then made other businesses not to be processed or to be assisted in actually to move them to a funding stage because we need them to have those permits for them to be trade. Also, the cost of these permits, they vary. The laws and the rules of these permits, they vary across different municipalities. So it's very difficult sometimes to verify these permits, which is a problem. But the department is busy with such issues through the red tape reduction project, dealing with the issues of the permits and so forth. Well, in some municipalities, you realize that actually, I think the CEO of CIPA was making this example last week, that, I mean, someone who is making 500 rand a week, you know, on sales for survival in their businesses, but they expected to pay 3,000 rand payments. Where will they get that money from? So those are the serious issues that we are dealing with in this space. That needs the intervention of the community as well. And one also other challenge that we had was the system that we're using from the FMEFA system in terms of quickly accessing the documents from the client and being able to then process the transaction quicker. We had that issue where the portal was not interfacing properly with the FIFA and CIDA system, which caused delays and which led to a reputational risk for both the entities at that point in time. But we have resolved that, and the CIDA and CIFA, we are currently using the portal that was for the challenge to avoid similar problems. Now we are processing these transactions through that, and we're able then to track these applications, and we're able to respond as quickly as possible. We also have the CEO of CIFA and myself, we have established the task team that is then dealing with putting all this data together and also engaging the different provinces. So that work will resume soon so that we are all aligned in terms of how we work together and also how we solve the problems that we face in the provinces. So that then those problems are resolved internally and we're able to move and assist clients smoothly. So that is what then that task team must then report to both CIDA and CIPA EXCO in terms of the work and integration that is done in the provinces. I know that in the work is started in the Northern Cape province where Don from CIPA is leading that project together with Zale, our provincial manager in that province, to make sure that at least we pilot that work there and see how we can then take that to other provinces where we're able to integrate and so forth. So I would probably say that on this slide, this one is a big issue. The limited capacity of CIDA branches, because when we introduced TREP, we also saw the numbers as they were growing from CIFA side. When we introduced the TREP, we did increase the number of employees in our branches. We had a huge number SMEs coming to our branches in terms of TREP. We've seen the numbers that came through from a TREP point of view as well. And we didn't increase the capacity of the employees. And so it's the same employees that are dealing with these numbers, with the increase in products, and also dealing with the normal work that they were doing for other SMEs that are not in the TREP space. so which has obviously resulted in a slow response in terms of the work that we are able to do. Again, the issue of the merger comes through where we were then employing on a 12-month contract basis in anticipation of the merger that was supposed to happen in April this year, so that then we don't have too many numbers of employees come the merger, and that will not be able then to absorb during the merge process, because if you are employing someone and you don't close and you don't do a contract for 12 months and 12 months later you say to them, unfortunately we can't absorb you, it's kind of unfair labor practice, because they would have moved from a permanent position from wherever they are to a temporary position, and a few months later you say to them you can't absorb them within the system. So we're doing those 12-month contracts across the portfolio. We are now doing 24-month contracts post the extension of the major period that we received in April. But again, we must say that has not solved our problem, but we are trying to then employ as many graduates as we've seen with the National Skills Fund to appoint 250 graduates, but that's work in progress. They've approved some funding for us, so we're working with them to see if that will take place. It's still early stages, but we are definitely working with them to increase the number of staff members that we have. As the CEO was saying, you know, work must happen. The merger will find us on the way, but we still need to make sure that work does take place in the meantime, while we are also finalizing the process of the merged entity. So those are our serious challenges. And as things happen, Chair, for example, KZN with the flood relief program coming in, again, that adds into what the branches are supposed to be doing, and obviously with no increase in the staff members. So those are the challenges that we face. And we are doing our work to employ the temps and interns to augment branch capacity. But what we find also, Chair, is that whoever comes to the system, for example, as a junior advisor on a 24-month contract, if they get a permanent job somewhere else, they leave. So we find that every 6 months we are recruiting, which is then not good for us and for the work that we are doing in the branches. But we have this measure that we need to take care of and make sure that we don't have too many staff members coming at the time or coming the time of the merger. I think I've touched on the issues of readiness of the entrepreneurs, but I wanted to just say that, you know, most of the trap clients that we were processing, we realized that, you know, because this was a program that was responding to COVID, they were more of survivalists. You know, their need to start business was more of a necessity other than an opportunity. You know, so the program attracted a lot of survivalists or need-driven entrepreneurs, as opposed to opportunity-driven entrepreneurs. And the struggle that we find here is that then the sustainability of these businesses then become a challenge, because some of the entrepreneurs come through the system and they're not really businesses, but they see a gap and they also you know, need to feed their families, and you find that along the line these businesses then don't continue because they found something else that they think is better. And while we have assisted them through the process, and some they would have even gotten funding, you know, which is a risk itself, because then they begin not to pay. It's a big issue, but we have been putting pre-investment measures to try and educate and coach and train these trap entrepreneurs, you know, to make sure that at least they understand what it means to run a business and if they're into this for a long run and so forth. But again, while we're training and coaching them, we need to find the balance, because the opportunity that they're looking for may have gone by the time we finish the training. So we find the balance between the two. So it's quite a risky space, even from a funding point of view. And we are also saying there was an issue with the low uptake of some of the programs in the township, still under trap, because, for example, some of the automated scheme that we had, it was not responding to the real needs of the automotive sector within the country. And this is mainly because we're not able to pilot these programs and have proper research before implementing them, mainly because we're responding quickly to the needs that was caused by COVID. But we are saying let's then in the new programs do our work, but obviously to respond sometimes to pressure that we get, and that topic, the program design and methodology. Chair, there's a lot of other challenges that I would probably not go through in detail, which are more provincial challenges that are unique to provinces. I would just touch base on a few, you know, or obviously, for example, Eastern Cape raised the challenge of the Carnegie and Ham, you know, where we need a lot of work to be done. There's opportunity, for example, there for black-owned businesses to do well in this sector, but there's a lot of regulations that are currently being dealt with, which are not enabling this sector to be funded accordingly. So again, you know, in issues of the department working on that, I know that we are working with the sector master plans around that to make sure that we find space for these businesses and we are able to kind of ring fence the work that they need to do. So we had engagement 2 weeks ago on the master plan and so forth, and we understand exactly what we need to do, and obviously the regulation to enable the success in this space to access funding. A same issue with the agriculture in terms of the keeping the raised additions of limited funding in terms of this space. I won't touch this on the issue of students' economy. Free State raised quite a few challenges around the issues of the functioning of the different municipalities in that space, which doesn't play an enabling role for SMEs to thrive in within the province. You know, issues of municipal database, SME database, you know, issues of not issuing permits to clients come in, you know, the infrastructure, you know, that is not in good space, that doesn't enable SMEs to do well in that space. But also the functioning of the municipalities. So you need the municipality as part of the ecosystem player for the SMEs to do well in the space. And that hinders progress within that province, where then you see the SMEs not surviving within the province. And those are the bigger issues that needs to be dealt with in these the opportunities, but we need LED officers, you know, we need everyone to come to the party so that we're able to run the ecosystem in a right manner. Again, there were some issues that were touched on regarding issues around you know, sand mining and so forth, which produced a lot of red tape for the SMEs within the space. Housing is more of collaboration with different role players, which is a challenge, but we are working on that because we've been able to have meetings with the different role players and the issues around different industries. KZN talked about the access to visa services. KZN was actually one of the vast provinces. So we have districts where we're not represented, but we know that our touch points will solve these problems. One of the big projects that we are implementing and we're looking for a budget to do so is to move the feeder branch from Westville to Etegwini, to a town, you know, so that then a lot of SMEs can then access our services. So that's what we are busy doing. But we need, we are looking at the budget availability for us to be able to do that work. This will help quite a lot because then to the SME. And the way challenges raised by Limpopo as well, in terms of access to various elements for the SMEs. Mpuma Alanga also talked about different challenges, including forestry, agriculture. Those are for the members to read as well. And Northern Cape also raised some unique challenges for that, which are challenges that need a lot of intervention for SMEs to do well. And as well as Western Cape sort of aquaculture, where, you know, there are licenses, but we need funding to fund the boat so that these guys are able to do the work. Chair, I would probably just talk the ecosystem facilitation model, just talks to what we're doing, the different work we're doing with different municipalities in the Western Cape and across the country, so I won't go into details. These are the partners, private sector partners that we, some of them, not all of them, that we are engaging with, trying to do and to build opportunities or to enable SMEs to access opportunities. We've got SMEs that we have put in some of these gold mine, we had SMEs and cooperatives that were able to train so they can participate in the value chain. Here we launched this project sometime in the previous financial year, and we have been able to put the SMEs in the pick and pay. We're able to give SMEs shelf space. But with all these subcore stuff, we've got our SMEs that are doing work that we've been able to negotiate for, and we've been able then to put them through these value chains, and they're able to do the work post our training, because then once we train them, and then these partners then begin to trust that they'll be able to do the work, and once we give them, make sure that the quality of their product is here and they comply with everything that is required, then we're able to bring them into the good work that we need to continue doing across the country. There are SMEs that need to get in, so we need more partners and so forth in this space. And then the next stage is about securing. I will stop there, which covers the balance of this work. Thank you, Chair, very much.
Thank you, CEO. We really wanted to see the success story also, but I think members will enjoy it when it's coming. Members, there you have it. There's a lot of information there. I'm going to invite Anne from members. Honorable Timisani, I recognize you first. Let me just take a order. And Brakin, you will also help me with just identifying all the members. Honorable April, you second.
My hand is up also, Chair.
Honorable Chloe Lang is number 3. Thank you. Those 3 in that order. So, Honorable Ms. Njani, you go first.
Well, once again, thank you very much, our Honorable Chairperson, and greeting to all the colleagues. Yeah, Chairperson, mine won't be too much. I just want to check here, because on CIFA's presentation, I hear them mentioning that one of the issues that caused the decline on the applications is the cash flow. The cash flow to prove if the client can repay back the loan. Now, I find this thing very much disturbing, Chairperson, because you will know that applicants, black people in particular, were very much disadvantaged previously, in the previous arrangement of apartheid, up until now. Then can they explain to us or this committee that how do you expect a cash flow from a student, a person who come out from school, a person who wants to start his or her own life in business? That person, obvious, does not have a cash flow because that person never had an bank account before. How do you then get the cash flow from such a person? In other words, this department or CIFA is telling us that such people will always be declined. In other words, they won't help our youth who just came out from school and who does not have a cash flow. Can they clarify that one on us, please? And also they mentioned less, if they did, less, very less about youth and people living with the disability. We don't hear any yet. So I wonder if they do really help these people. No wonder why we get in South Africa, we have a huge number of youth who are not working, but yet we do have entities such as CIFA, which does not help our people at all. Now, also, one other thing, Chairperson, can people also explain to us where is the list of cooperatives that were funded during the previous financial year? Because I believe that we made a request for such a list, but yet, till today, we don't hear anything. Because we can't be sitting here in the committee recommending these issues that we don't have a proof of. We don't have a list. There's no database. There's nothing. Yes, they come here to tell us they've done this and that, but things that we don't have a proof, then we can't be happy as a committee. We need to see a proof that indeed our people are getting help. And then, lastly, Chairperson, when we talk about informal traders, when we talk about informal traders, Chairperson, it makes us really feel the pain for these people. Because informal traders, the so-called hawkers, if you put it that way, every time you consult with those people around the country, every time you meet with them, you go to them and you ask them about issues like FIFA and stuff like that, they will tell you that they don't know anything about that. Even those who know, they will say that they tried to borrow money from FIFA, but FIFA rejected them. So I wonder if this entity indeed is there to help our people or is it there to help itself. Because you will be told that there's no money. Then you wonder where is the money, because our people did not receive the money on the ground. So you wonder where is that money? Where did the money went to? Because you are told there's no money. So these such things, Chairperson, they disturb us a lot. Can they please clarify on us those questions that I've asked from them? Well, Chairperson, lastly, the less I talk about CEDA, the better. Because these ones also, they always come here to contradict themselves. What they tell us here and the records they show us on the screen, it's not what is inflicting on our people. When you go to some offices, I one day went to an office in Edgeview, the old mall center that side. I found that office was closed. When I asked the people, why is this office closed, no one answered me. Those people, I don't think they monitor their own offices. These people, they operate as a team, they don't help our people. People go there, no help at all that they get. I can tell you now, Chairperson, I'm real, I'm not making up this thing. You can go around and ask people if they know about these issues of CEDA and FIFA. They don't know anything. People don't know anything. I wonder if this so-called roadshow they've done, if it's enough now or they must do another one. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Member Dimitani. Honourable Heinrich, it's your turn.
Good morning, Chairman. Could I firstly ask that this slideshow be put down? I see someone is still sharing the slide. It would help us a lot. Thank you very much. Good morning, colleagues, and good morning, Chairperson. You're doing a great job, Chairperson. So just wanted to say that. Chair, I am asking the committee's indulgence this morning because I've got a couple of things that I want to raise. You must know that we have received two presentations from the two entities that is falling under the department, and one would be short-sighted to, I couldn't write down all the notes that I wanted to write, but I am a very, very concerned member of the study group. I would like to concur with the notion of the previous speaker that the feeling on the ground is absolutely different from what is reported and the experience of our people with regards to the services that the two entities are giving. It is appalling. Chairperson, the least to say that if you find that CEDA is preparing a business case or a business plan and is not financed or funded, or cannot be funded by FIFA, means that we still have a very, very long way to go. There is no cohesion or working together in the department that would suggest that. Chairperson, let me start with FIFA. I am very worried when the FIFA's presentation says that a person thinks because they've got a South African ID that they have got a right to receive funding and have got and that person would have the characteristics of running this and that and a minister and a
and an MP and running to even the public protector, if someone goes as far as the public protector, it means that that person really thinks they've got a case. And if you come to the study group, and not the study group, if you come to the portfolio committee and you bring it to our attention that a person has even gone as far as the public protector to go and raise a concern, it means there is something wrong. I can tell you now, Chairperson, that I don't like, and I seriously want to discourage people of making such remarks in this portfolio committee. You must remember that we have got a responsibility to do oversight. We are not just here to approve budgets that is going to be spent, and when our people come to inquire from us, what budget, where is the budget spent, how can you assist me, and they bring it to us and we raise it with them, with the department, and the department now says, the attitude that I'm getting is that if we as the administrators don't want to help you, we'll not be helped. No matter who you go to, you can go to wherever you want, you can even write to the presidency. If the administrators don't want to help you, you are not going to be helped. That's the attitude that I am getting. And I can tell you, it is sickening to hear that even that attitude is being displayed in this portfolio committee, that no one will help you. And to even make mention to say that this is not SASSA. Our people are poor people. And this might as well be a business SASSA, if you want. Because it is the responsibility of small business, the Department of Small Business Development, to exactly help that small business person that feels they are standing in a SASSA line. I feel very appalled by that. It is notable, Chairperson, and I'm going to say this, that I've looked now closely at the spend of the department, specifically CIFA. The spend of CIFA in the Eastern Cape has tremendously increased. It was like this also not so long ago. If you look at what CIFA is spending in the Eastern Cape, if you compare it with what they're spending in other provinces, I get the feeling that there is preferential treatment given to people in a specific province depending on who is in charge. And that cannot be correct. I am not causing an aspersion, but I'm saying it for a fact, Chairperson, that it cannot be correct that every time that you find spend or you track spending, you find that where the administrators are from, there is where the money of the department is being spent. And this cannot be correct. It was like this in the previous term, and it will not be like this in this term. I want to make some notes also about the CEDA. You know, if you look at the province that I represent in Parliament, I'm sent by Gauteng province to the National Assembly. And Gauteng is the economic hub. Gauteng is the economic driver of the country, the biggest contributor towards GDP. If you look at what CEDA is spending in Gauteng, where we've got the biggest economic activity, it is appalling. And even to make the suggestion that we've got too little officers there is even something that does not go down well with me. I must tell you, Chairperson, that it has been my own personal experience that I have engaged the department and even the entity as an MP, because people come into our offices and they ask for assistance and they ask for help and they ask for guidance and they ask for feedback and all of those things. We engage the department. I cannot point you to a one person that was helped. Not a single person that was helped who came into the parliamentary constituency office where I sit. I'm sitting in Alexandra and I'm sitting in Sandton. And I can tell you, there is nothing that I can point you of anyone that stepped through those doors that was assisted by the department. It is one story after the other. The other thing that I want to say, Chairperson, when you look at the process flow that CIFA has got, they have got the pre-approval phase, what you call it. Even before a person comes to the investment committee, a person can put in an application to be funded. Even before they go to the investment committee, they are blocked. They are stopped by someone that says, look here, I don't think this thing is good enough. And when it goes to the investment committee, it will be shot down. My question is, does everything that gets to the investment committee
trustees, do they approve everything that gets to the investment committee? Why are they creating so much red tape? Why is the department not assisting the African child to raise out of the depth and the slums of poverty? Instead, I am of the meaning and the opinion, and I can be quoted on this. I am of the opinion that there are certain individuals who will probably be friends or somehow connected to those who are in the administration. I don't mean political office, I mean in the administration, who are then benefiting from these programs that CIFA and CIDA has got. But the real and the genuine people that need this assistance are not getting help. I am really not happy this morning. I can tell you, I will raise this with the DG and with the minister who's got the political oversight over these entities to come to us and to tell us all of these stories and run to a presentation that we have not received in time. It shows the disregard that these entities have got for the portfolio committee. And this cannot continue unabated, Chairperson. We will have to take action. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Eto. I now recognize Honorable
I'm so sorry. Will you give a second bite? Because there's two important points. I think I was just boiling. There's two important points that I wanted to raise. Can I take second bite or can I?
No. I think let me give you another so that we do one round.
Okay.
Go for it. Please make your concluding input.
Okay. As I'm concluding, just a second for me. I made some notes. I want to check. Why is there no commitment or lobbying for a percentage of all government department expenditure to go through SMMEs? And why is CIFA funding limits not aligned to QSE entities limits? And that is 50 million. Why is there no alignment from CIFA in that regard? There is a big issue also. The listing of suppliers. You remember the Honorable from Al-Jamaa always says this thing. The listing, the President has announced this thing, I think about 3 years ago. The listing of suppliers with the retailers, the uptake is so slow. Could we be told, could we be taken into confidence why there is such a low uptake of this listing? And when is it happening? Why is it taking so long? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Apro. I recognize Honorable Bridget and then Honorable Babauba will follow up.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to colleagues. I hope I'm audible. Chairperson, let me also welcome the presentation made by the two entities and the department as well. And I can't agree less with my two previous speakers, my colleagues. Firstly, I just want to say the issue that was raised by Honorable Mtenjana about the database, I think it's a long-standing issue, and we have been talking about it so that we are able to assess progress as our responsibility as the portfolio committee to make assessment whether our people are getting assistance or not. So I agree that we need that database, Chair. It's a long-standing matter, and I think in the database they must also include what number of the SMMEs that have been helped, their type, and it must also include the vulnerable groups, and those that are in the pipeline, where are they, whether they are 50% or 70%, and the challenges. Secondly, Honorable April, I think Honorable April, more or less, and Honorable John said the same thing, that is frustrating. We are so frustrated because we have constituency offices where people are coming to us on a daily basis, and they are not getting help, especially in formal businesses. So I think the two entities and the department must make sure that they improve the services that they are giving to the people. Because we can't have the government, we can't have rollbacks And when our people are coming to our offices, they're saying, but you government, there's always money that is going back into the government coffers, whereas we have submitted the request to the department. Chairperson, one must just say, during the visit by the ministry, here in the Northwest, I was part of the program that was led by the Deputy Minister, Satis Dumotlamin. And a lot of issues and challenges were raised by our own people, frustrations. Chairperson, one must just indicate that I'm not saying that a lot has been done, but in the Northwest, there is a little bit improvement. I will just give you a simple example. Number of the SMMEs were struggling even to be assisted by the registration. So I just want to say that, to commend the department only on this little part, that the program of the TREP in the Northwest Province currently, they have centralized everything, the provincial office that is situated in Rustenburg. Unlike before, where you have to run, and then they will say they send documents to head office, and then you will not get the help. But I talked to them, the two entities here in my province, to say, as much as I appreciate that you are starting to help the small businesses to register, I will also monitor, because documentation is something different. They also need resources in order to start the business and they can be economically independent. So I will keep an eye on it, but there is improvement in terms of services in the offices. They have allocated number of SMMEs, individual people who are working with them. So I'm monitoring them and I will also keep the committee abreast when we have the meetings. Chairperson, I have questions that I want to raise. I have learned through the presentation that the fact that an application that is prepared by CEDA does not automatically mean approval. And it gives a false hope, Chairperson, to the applicant. Hence, our people at some point when they had to reapply and reapply, they get frustrated, as honorable members have already indicated. CEDA and CIFA are both government entities. And therefore, I think they should be talking to one another. They can't just take our people from villa to post. My question, Chair, is what is CEDA and CIFA doing to improve collaboration so that the two speak to one another with one voice? That is my question, Chairperson. I thank you.
Thank you, Comrade Honorable Tlamilang. Honorable Babawa, you next, and then Honorable Loren.
Thank you.
It's first Honorable Loren, first Honorable Babawa.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and I'm audible in your side.
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes.
I'm just seeing a red screen, but I can hear you. You must unmute yourself, Honorable Babawa.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. My point is not longer, but it's not nice to say to serve under this portfolio committee. It's really, really, really hurtful. I want to concur with the Honorable April and Honorable Mkenja. That is why we don't need statistics of how many people have been funded. We need details with addresses of all beneficiaries. We always ask that. Because this thing of being given numbers and the department effort is their obligation to give us who, in where, because they are not going out to our people. We want to go there. We are in our constituencies. Not especially us, we serve. Our constituencies are in townships and rural areas, come from rural areas, where people are doing more business. So we are not talking some theories. We work on the ground. We need details, really. there are several cases as well that I reported before this committee from Bebe in Limpopo and everywhere else that leader neglected them and did not help them. Because some they will say there was a leader somewhere, we did go there and we did never get help. Those people are doing some piggeries and poultry farmers. Hey, these entities, they are not helping them. I just want to express my feeling that really we need to change the thing how we do things. Because these entities are not reachable and they are then reach out to our people. You will find out some people we even send them to tell them that this is Peter, you can even go online and do whatever. They will come back, people say that we are rejected and there's nothing that we can put. Maybe the previous speaker has got something when she said that there was an improvement some. But we cannot hide if ever there is some of the businesses that have been held. The ones that, more especially the ones that we are referring to this entity. So there's nothing. We don't have anything in our records as well. I just want to say to this entity, because really, really, what's frustrating the most is this, that they pretend as if they are working in their own individual corner. They are not working hand in hand together. Because last time they said to us, they are referring those who belong to SIPA to SIPA if they did apply to SIPA. But there is nothing that is the proof of what they were paying to another person. Also, I just want to say that this the former deputy minister. We were in a process where that is why I usually say that everyone when is taking a position must follow up what we were doing before. They must not set a presence if this thing is new. They must take where other members for. So we said here that even those leaders, they must be in every township, everywhere, every municipality, they must be leaders. But you won't find it in Madagascar. You won't find it in Heriqua. You won't find it. I'm just highlighting some of the townships in Mount Pleasant, Joker. You won't find Cedar. So I'm just highlighting. They are not anywhere. They are not there anywhere. Even in online, they are not reachable. Even them, if we can ask them their program of action here, what are they planning to go? Where is the township that are planning to go to? Because if they reject our people, they must go and call our people in one room. All small businesses, registered or not, they must come in one room in a particular township. If they are going to Madagascar, they must tell everyone, that every small business, they must come, motivating farmers, everyone must come. Then they do presentation. On the other side, there is a table where people are being helped to register if they are not registered. Those who need funds, it will be easier for them to go back home and get some document that is left if ever they are helping our people physically and if ever they want to give us the very purpose that I think they must be serving. Not this thing of coming in this, if ever there is no meeting, they are doing nothing. They come here and give us some statistics that we are not even sure that is they are doing. They must stop what they are doing, please. And they must go out to rural townships and everywhere else where our small business people are there. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Babawa, Honorable Lorraine. is Honorable Lubengo still on? Honorable Lorraine Lubengo, are you still on? Can you... I don't see her. I think I'd also like to make input if Honorable Lubengo is not coming through. Let me just give her one more chance. Honorable Lorraine Lubengo, just unmute yourself and make your input.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, am I audible?
Yes, I can hear you clearly. Please proceed, Honorable Member.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question goes to SIDA regarding the SMEs. Does SIDA know how many SMEs are in each district vis-a-vis the businesses? That is the SIDA. SIDA reaching 10% or 80% of the SMEs and crops in a district. I think, Chairperson, we need to know this in papers so that we must do the issue of the oversight. It will assist us a lot. How does SIDA determine the effectiveness of its intervention? I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Lubengo, and thank you to all the members for questions. Very robust, very engaging, very necessary input made. If the meeting allow me also as a chair just to make inputs before I hand over to DJ and team and CEO of SIDA and SIFA to input. I think when we as the committee said that we wanted this presentation is we wanted to not get just the high level stats and performance of the department, but really wanted to get into the nuts and bolts of the issues on the ground. And I think members have also in some way or the other also expressed some of the frustration because members are deployed in different parts of the country. And so they got a feel and a look of what's happening on the ground. And so we wanted this presentation to give us your own sense of what achievements are, what are the challenges, what are the success, but also more importantly, what are the areas that we need to do things differently. I think we all need to start from the premises that our situation is quite dire, our economic situation is quite dire, the unemployment rate is quite high, and so small business development is going to play a crucial role for economic inclusion, economic participation, and growth. Our people need jobs, and we as small business need to help create those jobs. We need to get a new entrepreneurial culture in our communities. There's 18 million South Africans on the welfare system, and there's only 5 million South Africans paying tax. So part of our government's intention is to create a new entrepreneurial culture, which says, let's not wait for handouts anymore. Let's make our own opportunities. And our government, through SIDA and SIFA and the department, is to give that helping hand, both in financial and non-financial terms. Now, I think I took lots of notes from both the CEO and SIDA and SIFA. So let me start by saying thank you guys for at least attempting to respond to some of the issues. And the feedback and criticism and constructive feedback that we get from our members isn't because we don't appreciate where we are, but I think the pressure is that we need to do more. And we're calling on you as our senior officials, those that are operationally the management and leaders, both the board and the CEOs, to actually do more to actually deal with the issue. We need a developmental and an activist type of official that can be responsive to the needs of our community. We don't want our officials just to describe the problem. And we're seeing some of the issues that raised. So the first theme that I picked up was staff and capacity. Now, I think it's a perennial theme that, yes, we don't have enough staff, and the temps and the integration of the two departments is only signed off now at the department also. So there is a bit of uncertainty. But I think what we need to do, especially from the leadership, especially from yourself, DB, and our executives, is to ensure that the bus is riding while we fix this bus. Small business needs to be more responsive to our community. The national government is giving, I think, 2.5 billion rand a year, and our responsibility is to maximize the developmental impact of that 2.5 billion rand a year. And we're also saying that we gave you 20 months to look at the integration and the coming together of both CEDA and CIFA into one entity, because there is still silos, there's still people working in their own area, there's duplication, there's wastage, and there's also, we've seen from this exercise two separate presentations from two existing structures, and we're not seeing you are talking together. I think members in many ways have said, look, the one is doing the application, so CEDA is supposed to provide the business plan, the support, and the other one, CIFA, is meant to do the approval of the plan. But we see two big anomalies. We see CEDA saying SMME supported and cooperative supported, and CIFA says X amount of money. But we can't see the link between the two graphs. So you say in total there has been 8,350 applications for finance, and only 163 has been rejected, and you spent 2.3 billion rand CIFA. That is yours. But we can't see the link between that approval and that rejection and what CEDA is doing in terms of municipal SMME-supported walkthroughs, youth, all the categories, township, rural, disabled, or female. We can't see the link between the two presentations. And I think that's part of the frustration that many of our members, honorable members, have expressed here. We also hear that there is inefficiencies in the ecosystem. We also hear that our municipalities are dysfunctional, so they're not dealing properly with local economic development. We hear your plea. It's not unreasonable, but I think a big thing is that we need to fix this ecosystem. So the capacity issue is there, and I think there's a plan towards that. I am worried about the cooperative DG, and so I'd like to hear you specifically talk to what is the plan to get cooperatives working. And I heard there was some cooperative in the pipeline, but I need to sort that out. The flagship project is the township and the rural entrepreneur program. Now, I think a lot of you have raised the issues that there's many of our people not formalized. There is many informal trader associations across our country. They are well organized. There is Tahita, there is StreetNet, there's many informal trader organizations. Why is it that we can't work with them, and they are membership-based organizations, and ask them to help ensure that the informal traders also get their voices heard and we respond to the issues that they've raised, because they are the most marginalized. There is an organization called the Informal Economy Development Forum. Why is it that we can't liaise with them so that we can get our informal traders to benefit more out of it? They are the lowest in the ecosystem. They are your mamas and your papas. They sell the pet food at the school. They are the survivalists that stand on the taxi rank that only make the 200 rand because selling just to survive, to make ends meet. Those are the real entrepreneurs that we must support. and we're not hearing innovative government approaches to dealing with those communities. You raise the issue of bylaws and compliance. Our president in lockdown said we must waive all the bylaw registration and permit from municipality, because here in Cape Town our people are so suffering. And the point is well made that that auntie that's selling there in the taxi rank, they're only making 600 rand a day. But our permit here in Cape Town is 5,000, 4,000 rand. They take our people away from the parade. They take our people away from Gatesville. They take our people away from our Langa taxi rank because we don't have the permit. So we are being doubly exploited. Our people are still trying to make a living. They're trying to be honest. They're trying to deal with the criminality that we have, but they're standing up and they want to do something, and our government is not talking to each other. The municipalities are not talking to each other because our president and our ministers are saying one thing, and our municipalities, the bylaws is not allowing our people to respond to that. There is a new person deployed in the head of presidency, Mr. Nkosi. He is heading up the red tape reduction plan. Where are we with dealing with this? Because we are cutting off our own people. I think the formalization issue is real. We want to encourage people. We also know that the SPAZA development program is not getting off the ground. Why is South Africans not taking the opportunities, and why is it that the majority of our SPAZA shops is in foreign nationals, and it is the Somalis, it's the Bangladesh, all of them are thriving in the SPAZA space, but why is South Africans not thriving in that space? So are we doing something innovative around those questions? I think the point about capacity and young professionals, the DG, it was raised quite sharply. Now, the president had two programs. He said that because schools need teacher assistants, they put in 50,000 teacher assistants across the country. It's a presidential project. Why can't we also get maybe 5,000, 1,000 young professionals, graduates, that can help CEDA and CIFA with the application process, and go to each of those black business associations or the emerging farmers or the small farmers and say, we are prepared to help you with the application. We are prepared to help you with supply chain processes in big companies. We are prepared to fill in the forms. Why can't we do something like that? The issue of provincial input. I've picked up cannabis. I've picked up the honey. I've picked up all of these things in our regional and geographical spaces. The president said that the cannabis industry must work for our people. But what's happening now? Our emerging farmers are still being criminalized. We can't commercialize it because the legislation is not there. What are we going to do about ensuring that black people, small emerging farmers, don't just be in the criminal economy, but we take them out of decriminalization, and we don't just have these big multinationals going to take over the cannabis and the hemp industry. What are we doing deliberately to help our cannabis and our small business communities in those areas? Here, the last point I want to make is, we said that we want the private sector, who is bullying our small businesses, to come and account. Why can't they have localization? Why can't we have the shop and saying, okay, these are the 1,000 products that we need, and this is the plan that we're going to ensure that South African emerging businesses also get a purchase from Woolworths to make a achar, or a purchase to make a belt or a braai stand from ShopRite or something. So in that way, our communities are getting entry into the formal economy. Because what is happening now, our people must stay at the informal just by selling food or selling clothing. When are we going to ensure or force the big companies to make local set aside for our communities and to cooperatives that we're talking about? I'm trying to just try to be so fast because I want you to input. I think I've covered many issues. I think the database members have spoken about there's some specific issues and some specific cases that honorable members, like I think offline, honorable Babawa, we need to get the issues that you've raised there, the databases that we have, that members have spoken about. Let me also address the issue that honorable Afrol has raised about the attitude. Now, I want to respectfully disagree with honorable April because we need to give money to those that are ready to do business. So I'm of the opinion that we mustn't just give money out as in the welfare. So it must meet the criteria. They must be able to repay their loans. They must be sustainable businesses. But I also agree with you that the department must be developmental. We must take our person's hand so that matric, that young person, that young girl, whoever it is that has decided, I'm going to be my own boss and I'm going to make a living out of myself. Not all of us are corrupt. Not all of us are scallop. Not all of our people want to steal. All of us want to make an honest, ethical living. And our government must help our people to make that honest, ethical living. And so that is what I think our members are talking about. How are we going to hold each other's hand to get, because what is happening here, there's burdens, barriers to entry. It's difficult to put in a business plan because we don't come from a culture. Our parents weren't rich white farmers or rich established businesses that we can write a business plan for. Our parents are coming from domestic workers, petrol attendants, and we want to be the new generation that is emerging to also be business because we see. But we also prepare to work hard, and I think that's what we want to encourage our members to do. I think we hearing you do operational efficiencies, and really what we are asking you is to just help us more, help improve. I think there's a lot of input here, but overall, we want to say that with all the criticism, I think we acknowledge the work that is being done by officials. We're asking you just to roll up your sleeves. It's difficult. We don't want to make you despair, but I think we're also pushing you in the right direction to do more for our people. Let me pause now here, and I see I've triggered more hands from members, but I actually wanted to give to the officials to respond. Let me see. Members, can I hand over to the DG, or I see April, I'm making this exception. I'm quickly.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to clarify that maybe I was out of, you quoting out of context. I just want to clarify that I'm not saying that we should operate outside of the legal framework that is there. I think the frustration that one feels when people are entering our offices is just what boils over. So if there's if I was taken out of context in this regard, I would like to apologize for that. But I stick to the things that I said.
Okay. Thanks, I know. No worries. I think it's important that we raise our issues. I'm also seeing now another hand. Members, okay, let me check. Is Bridget? You're the last one here, and then I'll hand over to DJ and the team.
I forgot just one important issue. My apology, by the very important point is, maybe when these road shows of the ministry, they go to provinces, you must be involved as MPs. I will give you a practical example. In the area where I come from, which is very, very rural, in Dr. Ruth Mombati, it was a very sad day on that day when the deputy minister was here because they communicated with the municipality. But what the municipality did, chose only successful SMEs. People were sitting in the stalls, in the taxi ranks. So I think they were hiding those people who really need help. So I think we need to be involved on those issues, Chair, so that we're able to mobilize everybody because many other informal people did not get the chances to raise the issues with the government. And in conclusion, Chairperson, I'm like April, I don't want to be misquoted. I said, in terms of the registration, there is an improvement, but financing, there is still a problem because there are those that were able to be helped because of my intervention as an MP, but they are still struggling to get finance, but they are registered after this program that was led by the Deputy Minister, Deputy.
Thank you for those clarities. Okay, DG, I'm going to invite you now to just respond to many of the issues. I also see there's someone on the chat. Can Peter also furnish us names of SMMEs that was approved for flood relief funding in the Eastern Cape? I'm going to ask that be taken offline. Our officials will get the contact to DG and CEO of both CEDA and CIFR. I'm handing over the floor to you for responses.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Member. We hear you very loud and clear in terms of the issues that you've raised. We will respond to the issues. Maybe I can start on some of the broad issues that were raised by you, Chair, and the other members. We all agree that the support for small businesses is very critical. I think government also is aware of that need. But there are realities that we have to face, and we also rely on your support as the portfolio committee in driving this message throughout government. The allocation of the budget, for example, is 2.6 billion. When you ask how much is spent on enterprise development across government as a whole from national treasury, you get a figure close to 20 billion. So most of the money that is supposed to go in supporting business, small businesses, goes to other government departments like agriculture, environmental affairs, and all these other government departments. So there is a drive led by the minister to consolidate, aggregate the support across government so that we can be able to account as government as a whole how much is really going and how is this money spent. Because currently, the other government departments who are receiving most of the money are not really accountable to us. They account only to DPME as well as national. So there is a need for us as government to just look at this allocation and how do we account for government money that goes to small business support. We understand the issue of us to do more. I think that's a message that we're taking a chance that we have to do more with what we have currently. We can't really say we cannot do much because of the limited capacity. We'll always strive to do our level best. That's why we're working closely now with the other parties, with the private sector universities, so that we can reach more people and make sure that we get as many businesses supported, even if it's not directly from us as the Department of Small Business Development, but other partners must work with us in ensuring that we get support as many businesses as possible. I think the issue of cooperatives is something that we've been concerned about as a department. The Deputy Minister has been delegated to lead the work around support to cooperatives. When we had the dialogue in Mpumalanga, for example, there were quite a number of issues that came up, and we had agreed that we are going to have a focused engagement on cooperatives. We have raised this even here in the portfolio committee that most of the time the people we are engaging with are these big organizations who say they are representing cooperatives, and it's mostly about politics. It's not about supporting primary cooperatives, because those are the key. If you support a primary cooperative and you have strong primary cooperative movement, those primary co-ops then will form a secondary cooperative that will assist them to grow even further. So, but what we are seeing in South Africa is mostly you have tertiary cooperatives, secondary cooperatives telling you that they have primary cooperatives under them, but those primary cooperatives are non-functional. And we observe that with FIFA, for example, they funded 12 cooperatives, and out of all those 12, none of them will be able to pay back the money. So there is something really that we need to do differently, and we've agreed with the stakeholders there. We even went to NetLeg to discuss this further with the various stakeholders there, and we agreed that there is a need for us to have a proper engagement where we are going to come up with interventions that will assist us to turn around the situation. We know that cooperatives are critical, especially if you want to get as many people as possible supporting or getting involved economically.
So it's a concern, Chair. We started discussions. The good thing is that we also have the Cooperative Bank Development Agency coming to see that as well, because they do have some capacity in terms of training cooperatives. So we will be boosting, you know, our support to the cooperatives movement. We agree that flagship, the TREP is a flagship program, and I think it was the first time that the government has decided to invest serious resources in the townships and rural areas. So far, for example, we've invested over $1 billion through TREP, but for us also, we need to learn some lessons from the, you know, the quick analysis. If you look at the amount of money that we have spent, we have we see that in terms of the return, in terms of jobs, it's always one-on-one. So one business will create one job. But when you look at the manufacturing side, I think FIFA funded, for example, 56 businesses, and they created over 3,000 jobs. So you see that there is a need for us to strike a balance between manufacturing, which is critical for localization, share, as indicated by you, that, you know, there is a need for us to start manufacturing our things locally. So we are proceeding with TREP, improving as we are learning, because this was really a first investment by government to township and rural areas. So, but then we need to strike this balance and make sure that we get other parties to play their role as well, because the issues around the bylaws, it has been raised, Chair. We have indicated that we are working on the Businesses Amendment Act to make sure that there is formality across the country. It's true that other municipalities, others, they charge 3,000 rand just for a permit. You go to others, they charge 500 rand, and there is no really a rationale why they can charge so much, you know, for a business that makes, others, they make 500 rand, you know, a week. So it doesn't make sense. That's why we are coming up with the Businesses Act, to make sure that there's uniformity across and also minimize all this red tape. Chair, the interesting discussion around cannabis, for example, we had our strategic planning session recently, and we invited, there is the committee that has been established by the presidency, because what has been discovered is that there are already red tapes even before we really explore and take advantage of this new sector in inverted commas. There are challenges that have been identified. For example, it becomes difficult for people to even get in, those who are operating informally or outside of the legal processes. It's difficult for them because of the licenses that you need to get and the equipment that you need to get. So we are taking this. We are part of that committee that has been set up by the presidency to deal with the red tape around this cannabis industry. We are, I think CIDA will also talk, the colleagues from CIDA will talk about what they are doing in the Eastern Cape. There is work that is being done to make sure that there is incubation work that is done to make sure that we don't exclude people who are already involved in the sector. So CIDA will expand on that. And then I will just respond to the issue of raised by Honorable Efren, the issue of the listing. We must admit, Chair, that it has slowed down a little bit, but the challenges that we are facing is that with the private sector, in particular the big retailers, most of them, they do this, there is no law that forces them to list local products. So we negotiate, and they do take some. But some of the challenges, Chair, that we've encountered is that one retailer, for example, they wrote to us and said, if you want us to take one product, we need to remove two products from the shelf. So the shelf space is limited. And so that's why we have decided that we are going to also push and support some of the black retailers. There is a company, for example, called Rulzi, which is a black-owned business. They mostly operate in a wholesale environment. We started discussions with them because we want them to take these products that are produced by Essence and Cooperative. These big guys, they is, I must admit, there is an element of arrogance because they don't need us that much. They are already successful. But these ones that are black-owned and they are upstarting, you know, there is a chance for us to work together or to walk this journey together. So work closely with proudly South African in the space, having this discussion and making sure that even the products that are produced locally are popularized, because it doesn't help them as well to take products and no one buys this product because they are not known. Some of the retailers have told us that, you know, for them they are not even looking at getting new products, they are trying to survive. So because the economy is not doing that well, so there is a need for them to make sure that they implement strategies that will make sure that they survive. Some of the products, chairs, are mostly saturated. There's quite a lot of businesses that are producing, for example, sauces, sanitary towels. Those products, you know, are a lot in the market, and some of these retailers are telling us that there's no need for them to take any new product. So we're trying to also encourage SMEs to produce those products that are not that popular, but are in high demand. Then lastly, Chair, the issue of the prices as well. Most of the SMEs, because of the scale, they are not able to charge lower prices. So they produce and then they charge high prices and they cannot compete, you know, with the big guys who are able to produce, you know, a lot of goods at a go. Chair, with the roadshow, we did try to involve a lot of stakeholders, including the MPs, but I'm sure Chair is going forward will also try and make sure that we include and improve in terms of the representation or the people who come through. It's possible, Chair, that they will definitely invite people that are successful. We know that we observe, Chair, that in most of the interactions that we had through the roadshow, most of the challenges were around some people were complaining about not getting support from us, but also most of the challenges were about service delivery. People were complaining about basic, you know, services that they are not getting from their businesses, from municipalities. That's why we had most of them there participating so that they could respond to the issues around land, the issues around the supply of basic services. We tried to respond to as much as possible, but we promised, Chair, that we'll go back to these provinces to respond to the issues that were raised where they concern us, but also those that municipalities promised to address so that we can monitor. You know, that these roadshows were not just us going around talking and not yet doing much. So, without wasting time, let me request the CEO to start responding. Maybe I'll request the CEO to see if I will start as his presentation came first, and then CEO see that will follow things.
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, I hope I'm audible to the honourable members.
Yes, please proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to start, Chair, with response to the question that was raised by Honourable Tanzani around the issue of cash flows and also the informal trader and the issue of the co-ops. I think the DG has spoken to it, or Steve, that one. Chair, I think maybe there was a misunderstanding of what we meant by cash flow. When we talk about cash flow, we're not saying a new African market cash. What we're saying basically is that the business proposal that the African is tabling must show that the business, when it's being implemented, will be able to generate enough cash flow to pay back the loan. DIFA is not chair and members, a collateral funder. We fund because we know a majority of our clients don't have collateral or security, particularly the new entrants in the market. That's why, therefore, you have to stress the issue of the ability of the business to raise money or revenues. One, to sustain its operations. Two, to meet its financial obligations. Because if we don't look, Chair, at the cash flow potential of the deal, we are actually engaging in reckless lending, because we need to satisfy ourselves that the taxpayers' money that we give to those SMEs will indeed come back. Hence, Chair, the matter of cash flow becomes important. It's not the cash flow of the individual. It is the cash flow of the business to meet its financial obligations, which is a basic requirement of funding business. And, Chair, the issue of informal traders and the proof that was asked for, we did present, Chair, if I may remind the members who were part of the select committee, the proof
procedures that we facilitate. If the committee can remember this slide, we actually dispersed 14.4 million to 4,844 informal traders. And the balance that is left is 484,000 rand. And we are actually now, Chair, looking at additional funding to support the informal traders. There's a pipeline of about 7,000 informal traders now. And the value of the application is around 21 million. I'll take down that, but I just wanted to remind the members that this information was shared in the select committee. And what we've done, Chair, we've learned during the violence in KwaZulu-Natal, during the flood, that it becomes difficult to provide support to the informal traders in the absence of some level of formalization. Hence, it becomes important now. What we're doing, we're working with the associations, because for us to verify and confirm that the person is indeed an informal trader, we have to go to the association to actually get confirmation from the association that, yes, this person is an informal trader, or if they've got a permit, we go to the municipality. So one of the things that we're looking at doing as CIFA for this new pipeline is to say, let's maybe look at making them some form of cohorts so that you even assist them with the procurement when they have to go and buy their stocks to sell. So they use them to provide support to the informal traders, as we have learned our lessons during the KZNGP violence. There was a question, Chair, around the funding for you. There was a slide that I shared, Chair, that Honourable April asked me to take it down. But I just want to talk permission, Chair, so that we talk to facts in this regard. To share that slide again, Chair, which will show practically, Chair, if you look, the youth funding that was actually dispersed by quarter four in March this year was 494 million. And we still continue, Chair, to provide funding to youth-owned entities. And if perhaps the committee then feels these are just statistics, we may have to look, Chair, within the confines of the law on how do we then perhaps invite some of these beneficiaries to as part of the oversight of the committee. Because these numbers, Chairperson, are audited numbers by the AG. But then if there's a need to further verify, we are willing, Chair, to support the committee to invite them to ask these questions, these people in person, whether indeed they did get this 494 million. That is now the youth. The question around the issue of an escalation of funding to the Eastern province is a worrisome perception, Chair, which I would like to put my head on the block as the head of that entity, that it's really an assumption that really is not informed by facts. I am suggesting once again, going to share with this committee so that we really, Chair, try to stick to facts as we engage in this regard. This testing is the geographic spread of the funding. Eastern Cape was 20, this is quarter one now of this year, 27 million went to the Eastern Cape to 43 SMEs.
Can you just make it bigger, please, when I can't see?
Oh, sorry, Jim.
And I think for everybody also, you can just make it bigger. So.
Is it bigger now, Chair?
Yeah, it's bigger now. We can see. Yeah. Yeah.
This is quarter one, Chair.
So, Chairperson?
Who's that?
It's Tenjan here.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, Chairperson, but I'm very sorry for interrupting the speaker here. I mean, this gentleman, I think, is known now for his arrogance. Now, he's coming here to tell us that what we said is not correct. He's telling us about statistics here. We want database. He can't produce a database. This is showing us maps here. He must not come and defend what we're telling. As a committee, we are trying to find each other here. We are trying to build up these entities and this department together So you must not come here and defend what we are telling you, that in our constituency we don't see anything. You are coming here, you are showing us pictures here. You are telling us about statistics. We are telling you practically, the people there on the ground. Please don't defend something that you don't know. Please. Don't do that.
Okay, Honorable Simusani, I've allowed you to speak. Look, I think we need to also respect each other. So I'm also appealing to us as members. We had an opportunity to raise our issues. I think we raised it very constructively, very sharply. So now I also want to protect the officials. And I think, yes, we hear out the concerns of our members, well noted, but I think this information is new. So even myself as a chair, I'd like to see this. So can I protect the CEO of CEDA and allow him to make his presentation? Because I'm in the interest of the public, there was an allegation that some provinces are getting more than others. And I think the problem is here. We must stop this divide and rule and create the unnecessary tension between regions or provinces or race or ethnicity and all of those things. But we must also correct each other. So if there is facts and figures to say that this is not the case, let us engage with that. So I'm making a ruling now, as I said. Let's allow the members to respond. We had an opportunity, and for the sake of information, let's continue. So continue, CEO, you are protected.
I was just trying to share the facts with the members that these numbers are actually extracted from our database of the funding activities. So I was saying, for the quarter one of this year, the Eastern Cape province, SMEs of 43, that got 27 million. The leading province, Chairperson, in terms of funding, is Gauteng at 177 million. And we did discuss with the committee of the driver of this. And we see that it is followed in the main by KwaZulu-Natal and the Western Cape. And this chair is informed by two issues. One, that being the structure of the economy, and two, the concentration of SMEs in these provinces that are leading in attracting the what we call the funding from CIFA. And then the reason why I share that, but I wanted to also go to the one of quarter four, the last financial year, which is as in March, Chairperson. I think this is the same slide, quarter one. Okay, sorry, Chair. Because I opened so many of these presentations that we previously shared either with the committee or with the committee in an effort, Chairperson, to assist in this regard the committee to see the numbers. That won't be relevant much. This year, Eastern Cape got 22 million and Gauteng got 238 million. That was followed, Chairperson, by was known at 98 million and Western Cape at 67 million. And really, Chair, the driver, again, is the concentration of SMEs in those provinces and the structure of our economy. So, Chair, I think I'm going again to put my head on the block and say I will assist the committee to provide evidence that it is not really an accurate perception that the Eastern Cape is leading. In fact, the minister, when she came in, when she saw the picture of Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Eben, and the Western Cape, he requested that we try and reallocate the budget now more to the poorer provinces. And Chair, we can even provide the committee with the current financial year's budget allocation. We push money out of Gauteng to the poorer provinces to try and find this balance. Because we said, we're not going to just sit there because of the structure of the economy. Let's try and find a way to really distribute this fund to these poorer provinces. And the key issue, Chair, that we're addressing in that regard, that automation is going to assist us, number one. Number two, we're saying we're going to recruit more people. For example, Chair, remember last year, we had the challenge of capacity and leadership in the Northern Cape, where we didn't have the regional head. We employed the regional head for the Northern Cape, and the numbers are turning around. The Free State had the same problem. We recruited the head of the Free State, and the numbers are turning around. Limpopo, we had the same problem. We recruited the head of the Limpopo regional office,
and the numbers are improving. The only province that we still struggle is the Mpumalanga province, where there's poor performance, and we're addressing that issue because there is a regional head there, but his performance is not satisfactory. And we said, we're going to engage this person, we'll capacitate the province, and if we have to shift him, we'll do that strategy. So we are putting practical interventions on the ground that starts to turn around the split of the numbers in these provinces. On the issue really to satisfy the community again, I would like to say if we are willing to have nothing to hide, to bring these numbers and the names of the people within the confines of the law as poor people can have, so that the community can satisfy that these are not just numbers, there are people behind these numbers. And on the Friday last week, the minister was celebrating in Pretoria FIFA-funded women. And if you were to listen, Chairperson, to the stories of those women who are successfully funded and now have begun becoming a good and kind of a business, we would like one day to bring those people to the committee so that the committee can hear, not just from us, but also they can listen to these players. But in the court space, Chairperson, I can also commit with the DG that we'll turn around that area of failing and we'll learn the lessons and we're saying, here are the practical interventions that we're going to put in place to ensure that we are able actually to rest, because the co-op chairperson used to work during apartheid. Your potato board, your maize board, you name them. And there's something right that they were doing. And we're saying, some of those best practices, let's put them into place now. And we're working with the private sector to do this application model. And we believe it's going to work because in certain areas it is already working. I'm sorry, Chair, if I sounded arrogant when I said we're not SASA, but we're just trying to pass the message that says as we learn, we have to learn within the law and not reckless, and make sure that the money comes in so that we can be able to finance the next entrepreneur. I'll leave it there unless there's something that's left up. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Steve. Look, I think we also need to just be patient with each other. So, it's almost 1 o'clock. I just want to hand over to the law. Is it Peter? CEO?
Is it for the order, if I'm allowed.
Andrew, I just want to finish this, because this is also me quickly. I'm going to give you a chance, but I want to... Who must still present or just must respond to some of the issues? I think CD spoke, CEO of FIFA spoke. CEO of Seeded Opportunity, is that correct? Because if you covered, yeah. Cozy Corner, if you want to come in, please.
Yeah. Thanks, Chen. Thanks for the opportunity. I will try to be brief. I think there was a point that was raised by Honorable Chen regarding some of the offices that, or one of our offices that was closed. We definitely we would look into that, but at that time there could have been reasons, because the only time we were closing offices is when we had a COVID cases. So if there was a case, so that then our clients are protected, we had to dig in those offices. So we close for a day or two, so that then we dig in and then we open it up again to the public, so that we reduce the spread of COVID. And the only other time is when there were issues of blood, but I would definitely look into it and check. I already told the Corruption Minister to investigate this matter. There was an issue of housing from Honorable April, the economic hub, and the allocation of funding. We do agree that the housing is an economic hub. However, we were just showing funding for the current financial year. We also know that in housing, mostly the focus needs to be in the townships and in the more rural sites, because most of the guys in housing that are in the suburbs, they are able to pay and do their own business plans, and hence you see that actually there is no application that comes through for funding in housing, and most of those are guys that are able to pay and do for their own business plans. But we will put our focus to make sure that the money that we are allocating to the province spent on townships and rural parts of the province to achieve that balance. There was also an issue about the listing of suppliers. Agreed that there is definitely a slow pace. We started this localization
a good connection with retailers and wholesalers rather. We started this localization program just more than a year ago with the department, and there's a lot of requirements that these retailers and wholesalers need for our SMEs to meet, from quality to everything. And those are those work that we do, but it takes time to improve the quality, you know, to make sure the product meets all the requirements, to improve the packaging, you know, the production processes and so forth, to meet the requirements of these wholesalers and retailers. So most of the SMEs, you can't get their products overnight. And even some of them in the food space, but they don't even meet the minimum requirements in the food industry. So we have to work with them. So those are the processes that take a lot of time, some even a year for them to be able to comply. We are working in that space, but there's no work to be done, and the department is continuing to be in those conversations with different retailers and wholesalers as far as that, because, for example, business, we can pay if you don't meet the minimum food requirements. They can't take that risk, because then if there's poison or food poison or there's a problem, people are getting sick, then it's going to be their reputation on the line and so forth. So we need to make sure that they meet that, but we are working hard around that. There was a question raised by Honorable Semelang. We are working on the issues of the database. I think there's a lot of issues as far as dysfunctional municipalities and their economic development offices that hinders us or hinders us in this way. But that's not the project on the SMSA profile, so at least we can have all the SMEs registered there, but that tool needs a lot of work as well for it to function properly. So at least we have a good idea of what is sitting there. But from what we have said, in each district, as leader, we have a surface of every client that has that we've been able to assist in the different districts. We appreciate the issue of the improvements. We will work together with emphasis on our offices to make sure that we continue the registration and formalization of businesses in Northwest and other provinces as well. And we would do appreciate the approach that says we're here to enable those processes, and we'll appreciate other members as well if they follow through, so that then we're able to measure and deal with these issues at the provincial and branch levels as well. If you get involved, then we'll be able then to do this work quicker, even together. We appreciate that. On the issues of Honorable Babano, we note the issues that you raised. We are willing to work with the committee in its oversight work to then be able to provide the details that they need, so the committee can be able to do that oversight. I know the chair said you take that offline, so that is dealt with accordingly, and we'll be able to provide the work so that the oversight work can be done, and the service can be verified and be talked to, and they will then be able to say they have been able to receive the work. Yes, there is a lot of room of the country that we need to get into. Hence our touch point exercise that we did is today we need to then be able to get into the most well-off guests, and our touch points, that the project that we are doing, yes, we didn't make progress in the first quarter, but we are working on then getting those local accountants so that they can be our access services, and we'll then be able to reach most of the work areas, even the ones that she mentioned. We also are still appealing for the issue of the budget, the CT was saying that we need, as a CT, we need a budget. The work that we have, we can't do it with a budget of 900 million rand. The work to cover the whole country and be everywhere in the country, the organization is not even possible. So we need, we are appealing, I think the committee raised the issue, Chair, that they've noticed that the CEDA's budget is reducing over the years. That was raised by the committee here, and we are still appealing that our budget be increased so that we're able to do the work that we are tasked with. CEDA is a big task, so we need to stretch the rent that we have and do more and higher interns as well to get the job done. So, there was an issue that was also raised regarding how do we track our work, and so as leader, we then, after we do our interventions, we then go back 6 months later and do an impact assessment on the work that we've done, so we can see where the client is and how far they are improving based on the work that would have been, that would have done. But our services are not one off. Our services are always continuous with our clients, because we can't just do a service, one service, and then we leave them.
So we have to continuously engage. That's why we find that some of the services are shifted, they come again, or as we assess them, they get another service from us, because we want to build sustainable businesses within the economy of South Africa. So that's how we deal with the issues of the index. So you raised some couple of issues. I'll just quickly run through them. We agree that the capacity issue is a problem, but we have to fix this, fix the engine as the bus is running. We are making headway even at CEDA, because we have acting executives to close positions. We were not able in the first round to get to the right candidates, mainly because of the period of employment that was 12 months, that has been increased to 24 months. So we're again interviewing so that we can close that gap, as you know that only one executive here is permanent, everyone else has been acting, which has hindered the growth and in some instances performance. We are also working with various sectors to fund the graduates, as we're showing that we are trying to get one and feed graduates into the Western, working together with the partners, and hopefully that work will yield results and we'll have more and then we're able to put them into the Western. But on the cannabis share, we are working with the Eastern Cape. This is a policy project of the province, Eastern Cape. So we are working with the province to make sure that we deal with these matters. We are part of the team that is leading, the sort of the team that is leading on this work with various stakeholders. We also, together with the stakeholders, looking at the data in that space to make sure that we are able to help. There's about 275 prospective hemp farmers that have been identified. Then anywhere but there is work that we are doing in that space, and hopefully with every stakeholder support, because CEDA cannot carry this alone. We need all stakeholders in the province and even the services to come through and assist us. So we are part of that. We've been tasked to develop some of the business plan for this work. So we're going to continue to discuss with the various partners. We have identified even of taker that is supposed to be supplying medicinal cannabis to Canada, and there's a lot of work with the province around this. So and we're looking into it and see how we then maneuver in this space to make sure that at least the SMEs, the black-owned SMEs, benefit in this space, and they are prioritized. But the province is prioritizing this work, Chair. And with that, Chair, I would like to just make the end there.
they have been sent to the members, I think you can call for correction, you can consider them page by page. Page 6. Chairperson, I've just observed one mistake. I think I've written Ghost Nazi instead of Ghost Corner, but I'll just rectify that. Or maybe he can consider changing his name to Ghost Nazi.
Members on that, this is the minutes of our previous meeting. I'm calling for any corrections that members have picked up. If not, I'm calling for the adoption of this minute as a true reflection of our meeting. Members?
Chairperson?
Yes,
I acknowledge
you.
Yes, Chairperson, with your permission, Chair, I stand to agree the minutes, to accept the minutes as a true reflection of what happened. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Mr. Stani, can I get a second?
Chairperson, just before I second, I would like to move King to please let us have the 2 minutes for the readings before we approve them like this. I've been trying to read this as he's gone through them.
always brings a little bit of uncomfortability when one is not certain about everything that is written down, but I will, in this instance, second the minutes, but request that we get those minutes to go over it before it is presented here. And maybe you send it and I just missed it, but yeah, I second.
Thank you. So with that, the minute is duly adopted. Members, honourable members, everybody on the platform, we do thank you for the participation and the meeting stand adjourned. Thank you very much, everybody.
Long live the chair. Sharp, sharp.
Thanks, guys.